Hey folks, this is Carrie Arentakai reading Keep Track of Losing Days by Giraffter, Chapter 5, Injuries. So this is immediately after I recorded Chapter 4. It took a, not even a stiff breeze, a gentle breeze to convince me to read the next chapter because I just really want to know what happens. As I was saying, I just really need them to kiss. And I'm pretty sure they're not going to this chapter either, but we'll get closer to it. Okay. Author's notes, content warning, this chapter depicts the aftermath of a non-POV character having been in a non-fatal traffic accident, and there's a discussion of someone having been injured as a small child. Okay, everyone, let's all take a deep breath and review the tags, shall we? The angst with the happy ending tag is still in play. This story has a happy ending. But first, here comes the angst. With the extra time it takes them to navigate through traffic and park, Wang Ji only beats Naming Dui back to the station by a few minutes. His partner seems to have cooled off a bit when he arrives, but he's still tense and distant. I told my friend in major crimes we'd go over there and talk to him when we got back from Nightless City, Naming Dui says stiffly. Wang Ji follows him silently, deep in thought. Everywhere they've looked so far has been a dead end. It's Friday evening. Wei Ying has been missing since Monday, and they are no closer to finding him. Intellectually, Wang Ji knows the odds when it comes to missing persons cases, and they aren't great. But he'd been so sure that he could find Wei Ying, help him if he needed help. There must be something else, something they're missing. Naming Dui's friend, Detective Hoffman, is a tall, lean black man with a close-cropped beard, maybe a few years older than Naming Dui. He'd worked a few cases with Naming Dui back in the day, before transferring to major crimes. He's eating a burrito at his desk when they arrive, and smiles around the mouthful of beans when he sees them. "You actually went down there," he says, standing and slapping Naming Dui's hand. "Christ, Nye, you are the craziest son of a bitch I ever met." Naming Dui throws Wang Ji a significant glance under one forbidding eyebrow, but doesn't say anything. "Okay," Hoffman says. "I need to hear everything you said, everyone you met. Everything they said, and you better hope you didn't hear anything good or I'm not going to be able to keep my sergeant off your back." "We didn't get everybody's name," Yiming Jue said, although most of them weren't doing a lot of talking. "Yeah, the Wens like to have a lot of guys in the room," Hoffman says. "Power in numbers." He leads them to a conference room. "I can show you some pictures." The conference room has clearly been set up as the command center for the major crimes investigation into the Wens' organization. There are pictures taped up all over, surrounded by bits of paper listing names, aliases, known associates. Hoffman gestures around. "Welcome to the war room," he says. "Anyone asks, you were not in here. Nobody's supposed to be in here but the Wen Task Force, but I'm desperate. Point anybody out who you talk to." Naming Dui gestures to a photo. "We saw Chao Wen," he says, switching to the English name order to reflect what's printed underneath the photo. "Ugh, that fucking guy," Hoffman says. "The younger son. Not exactly a criminal mastermind. Just a dick with poor impulse control and a lot of firepower." "Yeah, I got that impression," Naming Dui agrees. "The older brother is also a dick with poor impulse control, for what it's worth, but at least he's, like, competent," Hoffman says. "I don't suppose Chao sat you down and walked you through all the illegal shit he's been up to lately?" Hoffman asks. Naming Dui snorts. "Not exactly." "Who else?" Wang Ji indicates a photo of Wen Chao's bodyguard. "This man." "That makes sense if you saw Chao. That's Julio. He goes by Wen, but he's not actually related to them at all. Real last name is Zhou. Word is that Wen..." Sorry, this is tough. "Word is that Rohan Wen..." I don't think I've ever done that. "Rohan Wen did something for him or his family back in China a million years ago. And he's been the Wen's hired gun ever since. Mostly these days he's Chao's bodyguard, or more like his babysitter. Little brother there loves to start shit, and Julio's there to bail him out." They point out the other men who had been in the room, all low to mid-level functionaries in the organization, which tracks with their behavior at Nightless City. Naming Dui indicates a photo of Cheng Mei. "This guy." Hoffman gives a low whistle. "Fuck, that guy's a nasty piece of work." "The bartender?" Naming Dui asks, surprised. "Surprised. I mean, that's what it says on his tax return. But that's..." God, this is really challenging. "But that's young Cheng Mei Shui. He's kind of a jack of all trades for the Wens." The edges of Wang Ji's vision go white. Yiming Zhui shoots Wang Ji a look, and Wang Ji can tell their thoughts are running on similar tracks. Shui Yang, he says. Shui Yang, XY. Wang Ji closes a hand around the top of a chair back. What's his deal? Yiming Zhui asks Hoffman. You name it, he's done it, but he's a wet work specialist, Hoffman says. And I do mean specialist. The guy has, he shudders, flair. Those are pictures we don't keep up on the walls. He's been a suspect or a person of interest in like a dozen murders, but the Wens always get him off on some technicality. I don't know how much you talk to him, but dude is definitely not operating in consensus reality. Wang Ji thinks about Shui Yang's cold smile, the total lack of empathy behind his eyes, the relish with which he toyed with his knife. He's dead, Wang Ji thinks, a freezing wave of nausea overtaking him. Wei Ying is dead. He stands very still, and he holds on to himself, and he waits for Yiming Zhui to finish telling Hoffman about their visit to Nightless City. He does not cry. He breathes. His heart continues beating. Wei Ying shouting with laughter. Wei Ying raising an eloquent eyebrow. Wei Ying drowsy and pensive. Wei Ying incandescent with anger. Wei Ying in sunlight, in moonlight, in streetlight. Wei Ying's nimble fingers in scuffed up sneakers. Wei Ying's long thighs and sparkling eyes. Wei Ying. This is my friend Lan Zhan. He looks very serious, doesn't he? Yiming Zhui thanks Hoffman, and Wang Ji silently follows him back down the hall, into the elevator, back to their desks. Yiming Zhui peers into Wang Ji's face, his eyebrows drawn together in the black, vicious scowl he only wears when he's very worried about someone. Okay, he says brusquely. Okay, here's where we're at. We know Wei was mixed up in something with... We know Wei was mixed up with something with the Wens. We don't know what, and we still don't know that it's related to his disappearance. We still have a missing person to find, so what do we do? Work the case, Wang Ji says through clenched teeth. He knows if he opens his jaw so much as a fraction, the emotion clogging his throat will come leaping out. We work the case, Yiming Zhui says. First things first. You're going to tell me, right now, that you're not going back there tonight. Wang Ji nods. It's Friday night and the club will be packed. If Shui Yang actually does any work as a bartender, Wang Ji won't be able to get near him anyway. And if he's half as homicidal as Hoffman claimed, Wang Ji will need a different approach altogether. He needs to regroup. I need you to say it, Yiming Zhui prompts. I'm not going back there tonight. Yiming Zhui exhales, a long sigh. Good. I assume you're wanting to keep working on this over the weekend? All right. I'll meet you here tomorrow morning, and we'll keep working, okay? Okay. Wang Ji grits out. Try not to stay here all night. Yiming Zhui picks up his motorcycle helmet and slings it over his shoulder. He pauses as if he's going to say something else, but doesn't. He pats Wang Ji's shoulder briefly as he leaves. Wang Ji sits at his desk, his hands clenched into fists, and stares at nothing. All along, he's been telling himself that there's no way Wei Ying could have actually been involved with the Wens, that the clues leading to the nightclub were a coincidence, that XY would turn out to be some busboy or club kid or Wang's weed dealer or something. Even now, he can't understand how Wei Ying, kind, righteous, outspoken Wei Ying, could have had anything to do with people who would do the kinds of things the Wen organization was notorious for. But that's clearly the case. It had been foolish to let his affection for Wei Ying cloud his judgment. Beyond that, it had been a disservice to Wei Ying, who, if he's still alive, an increasingly big if, deserves everything Wang Ji has to bring to bear on the case. There's a rap of knuckles on his desk, causing him to look up sharply. Jiang Wenyin is standing there, a worried frown creasing his brow. Didn't mean to startle you, he says. Just wanted to check in before the weekend. Any news? Wang Ji settles his face into its usual neutral expression. We're doing everything we can, he says, which is what you're supposed to say to the family when you're not making progress. Jiang makes a face. That's what you're supposed to say to the family when you're not making progress, he says. I thought you were going to keep me in the loop on what you found. He presses his lips together so hard they turn white. Meeting his eyes is too difficult. Wang Ji fixes his gaze on Jiang's chin. It's not looking good, he says quietly, his chest a hollow shell. A cloud of pain and fear settles onto Wei Ying's brother's face. Jiang clenches his jaw, and the fear makes a lightning-fast shift to anger. Are you giving up? He demands, assuming an aggressive posture, like he's already concluded that the answer will be yes. Wang Ji feels an answering spark of anger deep within him. He grabs desperately for it, clings to it, feeds it, lets it pour through his veins. No, he says. No, I'm not giving up. Jiang exhales through his nose, still looking furious. Are you ready to let me help you on this? He glowers. Yao won't be happy that he's bringing Jiang in on the case, but screw Yao. Screw departmental politics, screw major crimes, and screw the Wens. If Wei Ying is alive, he's going to find him. If Wei Ying is dead, he's going to see justice done, even if he has to take down the entire Wen operation to do it. Meet me here tomorrow morning, Wang Ji says. My partner and I will get you up to speed. Back to our flashback. He's not sure if he should go up to the roof or not. After the altercation with Officer Petty, Wei Ying might need some space. Wang Ji can't stop picturing the way Wei Ying glared at him, the way he'd walked away, like Wang Ji was a stranger. He gets up and walks to the door and turns around and sits back down a half a dozen times. Fortunately, Si Chen is out with Meng Yao and isn't there to see Wang Ji dithering back and forth. Finally, Wang Ji decides that the thought of Wei Ying sitting on the roof alone, thinking Wang Ji didn't want to see him, is worse than the thought that Wei Ying might still be angry with him. Wei Ying is stretched out on the roof, his positively ancient Converse sneakers kicked out in front of him, drinking. Usually he has an attitude of louche enjoyment when he's reclining like this, but tonight one foot is tapping restlessly and his shoulders are one unbroken line of tension. Wang Ji settles down next to him, feeling the difference between his own upright posture and Wei Ying's expansive sprawl more than ever. Hey, Wei Ying says, not looking at him. Hi. They sit there together, the strain between them pulling tighter and tighter. Wang Ji doesn't know what to say. Dave wasn't doing anything, Wei Ying says suddenly. Wang Ji nods. I know. It's bullshit to just move somebody along like that. He wasn't hurting anybody. Where's he supposed to go? He went down to the park, Wang Ji says. I spoke with him after I saw you. Wei Ying turns his head to look at him. You did? What did you say to him? I apologized. Wei Ying's shoulders relent, just a fraction. His eyes soften, looking at Wang Ji, but then his gaze turns inward, bitter. He looks away again. It's such a terrible law. Nobody knows what it means. There's no consistency. It's just, like, an excuse to clear people out whenever somebody feels like it. I agree. And yet you enforce it, Wei Ying says with a sour chuckle. Wang Ji lifts one shoulder in an uncomfortable shrug. These things tend to lend themselves to selective enforcement, as you say. One option with such things is to simply not enforce them. So what, you just ignore the law? If it is an unjust law. That must make you real popular down at the station, Wei Ying says dryly. Popularity has never really been my concern, Wang Ji replies just as dryly. Wei Ying chuckles again, and it's not a real laugh yet, but it's closer. He looks back at Wang Ji, and there is something raw and unsettled in his eyes that steals Wang Ji's breath. They gaze at each other for a long moment, and Wang Ji can feel the unspoken thing between them that he'd thought might be ruined, stirring back to life. As usual, Wei Ying is the first to break eye contact. He shakes his head, swigging almost absently from the bottle in his hand. Lan Chan, he says. Why do you have to be a cop, Lan Chan? Why couldn't you be a concert violinist? Wang Ji asks quietly, completing the question he's been asked too many times to count. Wei Ying must hear something in his voice. His eyes dart up to Wang Ji's face, taking him in with a measuring look. For example, he says carefully. This is a question Wang Ji has put a lot of thought into, a question he's been asked too often by too many people not to have thought about it. It's a conversation he's known they were going to have. Known they would have to have sooner or later if they were going to be anything, even friends. It's a question with many answers, many layers of answers. He speaks slowly, trying to choose his words with care. "My parents split up when I was very young," he says. "My father was awarded full custody of my brother and me. I didn't understand it at the time. Who would separate children from their mother? But when we did see her, there was always a sense that we were being allowed to see her. That permission might be withdrawn at any time. And then, only a few years later," he swallows, surprised as always at the freshness of old grief, "she died." Beside him, Weiying's breath catches. He knows Weiying is watching him, but he can't look back. He watches an ant crawling along the concrete instead. "As I got older, the situation became clearer to me. I don't know if you know about my family. About the lands," he clarifies, not sure if he's embarrassed for thinking Weiying would have heard about the land business empire, or for thinking he wouldn't have. "I do," Weiying admits. "I wasn't sure if you were those lands." "My family, my father's family, disapproved of my mother, and always had. They had a full legal team on retainer. My mother had a complicated past. There was never any question of her getting custody of us. She could barely afford legal counsel. Against an army of lawyers, what chance did she have?" Weiying's voice is dry and brittle. "No chance at all. It was unfair, unjust." "Yes," Weiying says, so softly Wang Ji can hardly hear it. "I believe in justice," Wang Ji says. "I believe that the law has the power to help people. That's what the law should do. That's what I want to do." "If that's how you feel, why not become a lawyer?" "I thought about it," Wang Ji confesses. "When I was in college, when I started to realize that I didn't want to pursue music professionally, I considered going to law school. But..." He waves a hand, reaching fruitlessly for the words to express how he'd felt at that time. His anger at his father for ignoring him for 15 years and then dying. His creeping fear that he'd end up Lan Industries as corporate counsel despite his good intentions. His burning need to do something, anything, now. "I felt I could do more good upholding the law." Weiying pushes himself up onto his elbows. "But you said it yourself. Some laws are unjust. The whole system is unjust." There's a damp bite to the air tonight, and he shivers a little. "All the more reason for people who believe in justice to participate in the system, to change it from within." "See, that's where I disagree with you." Sorry, almost sneezed. Okay, where were we? "See, that's where I disagree with you." Weiying sits up, draping a bony elbow across one knee. "If you participate in the system, you're complicit in its wrongdoing. Even if you don't commit the wrongdoing yourself, you tacitly condone it." His words have a practiced air. Wang Ji gets the impression he's had this discussion before. "I don't see a way to address that wrongdoing, except from within." "Burn it all down?" Weiying suggests, sliding him a sidelong grin. Wang Ji shakes his head at his friend. "Shameless. It's all too fucked up to fix, Lan Zhan. We should just scrap it and start fresh." "Do you have a practical suggestion for doing so?" Wang Ji says, raising a skeptical eyebrow. Weiying laughs, a real laugh, tinged with sadness. "I'm still working on that one. I'll let you know." Wang Ji risks looking directly at him. Weiying is regarding him with a sort of melancholy fondness. His mouth is soft and affectionate. Wang Ji thinks about kissing him. It's not the moment, obviously, but he thinks about it. "I know that we may never agree on this," Wang Ji says into the dark wells of Weiying's eyes. "But I hope you can understand. I don't do this for love of power or authority. I do it because I want to help people, to pursue justice at all costs." Weiying sighs. "I know," he says. He takes a long pull on his whiskey. "That's what I want, too." "I know," So you try to fix it from the inside. I'll try to burn it down from the outside, and whoever gets there first buys lunch. Deal, Wang Ji says, gravely proffering a hand. Wei Ying sets his bottle down and takes it, and they shake on their new agreement to destroy society. Wei Ying's hand is smooth and cool. His thumb moves, just a fraction of an inch, against the skin of Wang Ji's wrist, and Wang Ji can feel that touch thrum through his entire body. They're still shaking hands. Have they been shaking hands for too long? Wang Ji is caught in Wei Ying's eyes. His heart shivers. Wei Ying's eyes widen. He looks down at their hands, draws a breath. Wow, he says. Your hands are huge. Wang Ji doesn't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing or what. Wei Ying pulls his hand away and reaches for the whiskey bottle. Sorry, reader's break. I just know that Wei Ying went home and was like, what the fuck did I say? After shaking his hand for too long. Because that is a wild thing to say. And I'm glad that Wang Ji didn't notice. But Wei Ying is probably going to be haunted by that one. Okay. It was nice to meet your friends today, by the way, he exclaims, his voice suddenly bright and chipper. Wang Ji says, feeling a mild whiplash from Wei Ying's sudden topic change. Your friend Mian Mian is very pretty, Wei Ying says with a puckish grin. Is she your girlfriend? Wang Ji straightens his back. She's married. And completely beside the point, since Wang Ji has never been anything but extremely all-encompassingly, I guess, gay. Wei Ying makes a sympathetic face. Reader's break. No, you should have said that. You should have said that part. Out loud. He didn't, though. Please note that he did not say that part out loud. Wei Ying makes a sympathetic face. Oh, poor Lan Zhan. Well, don't worry. There are plenty of pretty girls out there for you. And either he's being deliberately obtuse or he's the most oblivious man alive. Because all Wang Ji can think about is what the skin on his neck might taste like. Whether his long eyelashes might drift close with pleasure if Wang Ji were to bite him there. But Wang Ji also knows is shut down when he hears one. At least they're still friends. End of flashback. Killing me. Okay. I do appreciate the do you like Mian Mian vibe. I feel like that is funny in every incarnation. After Jiang Wenyin leaves, Wang Ji carefully signs out Wei Ying's phone records and notebooks from evidence and brings them home with him. He finds that he often does his best thinking from his home office, without the sights and sounds of the busy police station to distract him, and he doesn't plan on getting much sleep tonight. Si Chen is sitting at their dining room table, laptop open, grading a stack of quizzes, when Wang Ji arrives home with a box of evidence in his arms. Working late tonight? He asks, glancing up over the top of his reading glasses. Wang Ji deposits the box in his office, then reemerges. He needs a snack and to sit quietly for a few minutes before diving back into the case. Still that same case? Your friend from the roof? Yes. He debates telling Si Chen about their excursion to Nightless City, but decides it would worry him too much. Niming Jue is unlikely to mention it. Wang Ji knows he tends to downplay the more dangerous aspects of their work when talking to Si Chen. He suspects it's a common trait in people in their line of work. How was your day? He asks instead. Pretty good. I actually had some students come to my office hours today. I think they're getting nervous for the midterm. Oh, no. Sorry. I often criticize academia-adjacent stuff and fix for being not realistic. And I feel like this next part, all of this seems pretty realistic. Right, so he says, I actually had some students come to my office hours today. I think they're getting nervous for the midterm. Wang Ji wanders into the kitchen, selects an apple from the bowl. It's good that they are preparing now. Of course, the students who actually come to office hours are never the ones who need to be worried about their midterm grades, Si Chen says. I ended up emailing that guy Tyler about his quiz grades this morning, actually. It's getting to the point where if he flunks a few more, he'll fail the quiz portion of the class. And that's 15% of his grade. Did he respond? Wang Ji asks, sitting down at the table. Si Chen smiles, gentle and a little rueful. Not yet, but hope springs eternal. Wangji munches his apple, staring into space, not really thinking anything, just letting his mind rest. Si Chen makes his way through another quiz. Meng Yao mentioned that you met him for lunch today, Si Chen says presently, in a manner that is perhaps overly casual. That was today, Wangji thinks dully. A lot happened today. Yes. It means a lot to me that you're taking the time to get to know him, Si Chen says. Apparently Meng Yao hadn't elaborated on the topic of his and Wangji's lunchtime conversation. Interesting. Wangji hums noncommittally. Si Chen takes off his glasses and regards him frankly. I know you've never really warmed to Meng Yao. Caught off guard, Wangji fumbles for a response that is neither a lie nor something that will hurt Si Chen's feelings. I'm not warm. And I'm not stupid, Si Chen counters, exasperated. Words cannot express how little Wangji wants to have this conversation right now, but he loves his brother. I didn't say you were. Neither is Meng Yao. Did you know he was worried he'd done something to offend you when he first met you? Wangji shakes his head. Meng Yao has never offended him. It would be easier if he had. I told him not to take it personally, Si Chen says, a smile flickering to his face. I told him you just never think anyone is good enough for me. No one is, Wangji points out. This is objectively, empirically true. Si Chen is kind, intelligent, thoughtful, generous, and well-mannered, not to mention wealthy and handsome, as the matchmaker Uncle Tiran had brought to their house once. And only once. It was the first time Wangji had ever seen Si Chen stand up to Lan Tiran. And after Lan Si Chen threw the politest tantrum in the history of the world, no more was said about it, had been quick to point out. No one could even come close to deserving him. Even Ye Ming Jue doesn't deserve Si Chen in the slightest, a fact which Wangji has magnanimously chosen to overlook because he loves Ye Ming Jue, and because Ye Ming Jue would be the first person to agree with him on that count. Si Chen laughs. Well, it's kind of you to say so, but I'd rather not get laid again just because you have impossibly high standards. Si Chen ge, Wangji reproaches him, flushing. It's not like he thinks Si Chen is celibate, but he thought they'd had an understanding never to discuss their sex lives. We are roommates, Wangji, Si Chen says, rolling his eyes. I am 32 years old, and I do occasionally have sex. I know you have delicate sensibilities, but give me a break. I'll show you delicate sensibilities, Wangji thinks mutinously. Sorry. Just for that, he's going to find Wei Ying, drag him back here, and have sex with him on every surface in the apartment. That might cause Si Chen to rethink his new talk to my brother about my sex life policy. The thought of Wei Ying pulls him up short, the fear and sadness creeping back in around the edges. I need to get back to work, he says, pushing back from the table. I'm trying to say, Si Chen says. I know Meng Yao kind of rubs you the wrong way. I don't know why, but I can see that he does. I don't know why either, Wangji thinks miserably. I just don't trust him. He stands there, awkwardly holding his apple core, waiting for Si Chen to finish speaking. But I hope that can change, Si Chen continues. He's a good person, and you two actually have a lot in common. I think you'll like him once you get to know him better. I'm trying, Wangji says, and resolves to try harder. I know you are, and I appreciate it. Meng Yao, Si Chen gives a love-struck little sigh. He makes me really happy, Wangji. Happier than I've been in a long time. Wangji will never understand how it can be that Si Chen, who was raised in the same house that Wangji was, by the same stuffy old man, can be so much more comfortable talking about his feelings. His brother just says how he feels, like it's easy, like it costs him nothing. Maybe it's because he got more time with their mother before she died. You deserve to be happy. Si Chen smiles again. So do you, little brother. Wangji deposits the apple core in the compost bin, hoping that they can be done talking about emotions for a little while, before he bursts into tears and tells his brother that he was almost murdered by mobsters today because he's so freaked out that the man he loves might be dead that he can't even think clearly. I'll be in the office, he says. I can take the lead on making dinner if you'd like. Xichen replies, picking up another quiz paper. In his office, Wang Ji pulls out a notebook and tries to organize his thoughts. He's always thought better when writing with ink on paper, instead of typing. It's apparently something he and Wei Ying have in common, based on the stack of notebooks he still has to go through. Basic timeline leading up to Wei Ying's disappearance, he writes. Shuaiyang reached out to Wei Ying 3 weeks ago, after meeting him at a party. Follow up with Xiao Xingchen. Jiang Wenyan may have his contact information, and if not, Wen Qing probably does. He offered Wei Ying work on a project. I'm going to indicate where there's a, like, because it's bullet point. So I'm going to indicate where a new bullet point comes in. So, and also the indentation somehow. Okay, so he offered Wei Ying work on a project, bullet point indented. What project? Likely something to do with computers. Wang Ji doubts this all started because Nightless City needed a new waiter. And Wei Ying is, he thinks fiercely, by all accounts, something of a computer genius. Back out to the previous indentation. Shortly after the initial conversation, Shuaiyang left something for Wei Ying. Based on his reference to an incentive program, it was probably money. Bullet point. Wei Ying declared himself to be not interested and offered to return whatever Shuaiyang had left for him. Indented bullet point. Wei Ying is frequently on the lookout for side projects to make some extra cash. The project must have been pretty distasteful for him to turn down paying work. Next bullet point on the same level of indentation. Alternatively, he'd learned that Shuaiyang was affiliated with the Wens and had refused on principle. Bullet point. Why would the Wens need to enlist the services of a computer whiz in the first place? Back out to the main indentation level. This is insane. I'm sorry, but I feel very strongly about bullet point lists and their organization. So back to the main alignment. 2 weeks went by, during which time Wei Ying repeatedly ducks Shuaiyang's calls. Indentation. Wang Ji had seen him a couple of times during this period, and he hadn't done or said anything out of the ordinary. Back to the main alignment. The night before Wei Ying disappeared, he had gone up to the roof and gotten stinking fall-down drunk, which was unlike him. Wei Ying is often tipsy but rarely outright drunk. Indented, bullet point. He seemed distressed, but Wang Ji hadn't been able to suss out the cause. It was likely related to the situation with Shuaiyang and the Wens, though. Back to the initial alignment. The day Wei Ying disappeared, Shuaiyang left something else for him. Indented, bullet point. Likely the source of the Nightless City envelope in Wei Ying's locker. Forensics hadn't found any fingerprints or anything of note on it, but that didn't mean the original contents weren't important. Bullet point. Probably not money, if Wei Ying had already turned down the initial sum. Bullet point. Whatever it was, it had gotten Wei Ying's attention. He called Shuaiyang back immediately. No bullet point, but we're going to have a numbered list. That means that most likely, either, one, whatever Shuaiyang left for him changed Wei Ying's mind, and he's currently holed up somewhere working on the Wens' project. Two, whatever Shuaiyang left for him scared Wei Ying badly enough that he'd left town or gone into hiding. Three, the Wens had abducted or blackmailed Wei Ying, and he's currently imprisoned somewhere working on the project. Four, the Wens had Wei Ying killed, and his body is at the bottom of the Sound. Wang Ji rubs his eyes. If it's the last possibility, there is nothing he can do about it. For his own sanity, and to give himself the best shot at finding Wei Ying if he is still alive, he needs to focus on the first three possible scenarios. Items 1 and 3 are functionally the same for his purposes. That leaves the following avenues of pursuit. Bullet point. What sort of computer project might the Wens need help with? And where might the Wens hide someone who is working on it? Bullet point 2. Where might Wei Ying hide to lie low until the Wens lost interest? Unfortunately, the answer in both cases is too many places, too many unknowns. The Wens control a number of properties and small businesses around town and could plausibly hide or imprison someone at any one of them. Wei Ying is wily and secretive and could have gone to ground pretty much anywhere. He needs more information. Wang Ji sighs and picks up the stack of phone records. It's going to be a long night. Okay, scene break, and we are back into our flashback. I think maybe this is our last flashback. He walks out onto the roof, and Wei Ying is standing there, right at the edge of the roof, holding his flute, his skin lit orange by the rising sun. "Wei Ying?" Wang Ji asks, taking a step forward. Wei Ying turns towards the sound of his voice. He sees Wang Ji and starts to laugh, high and strange. And then something changes in the light, and Wang Ji realizes that he's crying. Oh, maybe this is not a flashback. Okay, never mind. Forget everything I just said. It looks like a flashback. It's in italics. There's blood on his face, running down from his mouth. "Wei Ying," Wang Ji says again, as if commanding a voice, in as commanding a voice as he knows how, terror spiraling through him. "Wei Ying, come back." He stretches out his hand, beckoning. Wei Ying sobs, laughs, sobs again. He looks at Wang Ji and shakes his head, his soft, bloody lips pressed together in a smile. He closes his eyes and tips backward off the edge of the roof. Wang Ji starts to run, his hand still outstretched, and there's no way he can get there in time, but he does anyway. He's thrown himself across the roof in one fleet, sudden bound. He catches Wei Ying's hand just as Wei Ying goes over the edge. They're staring at each other, Wei Ying's hand gripped tightly in his, and Wang Ji isn't strong enough to pull him up. Wei Ying is whispering something, but Wang Ji can't make out what it is. There's a roaring in his ears that drowns out all other sound. He tries again to haul Wei Ying back up onto the roof, but their hands are slippery with something. Wang Ji notes with detached amazement that he's bleeding. Even though he doesn't feel any pain, blood is running down his arm from somewhere, coating his fingers where they clutch desperately at Wei Ying's. Their hands slip another inch, slick with blood. Wei Ying is going to fall. Wang Ji isn't strong enough, not strong enough to hold him, not strong enough to pull him up. "Lan Zhan," Wei Ying is whispering. "Lan Zhan, let me go. Lan Zhan." "Wang Ji?" Wang Ji bolts upright in his desk chair, gasping, his heart pounding. He doesn't understand where he is for a minute. He's not in his bedroom. It takes his brain an extra few seconds to understand what's happening, that he's fallen asleep at his desk, his cheek pillowed on Wei Ying's case file. His back and neck are stiff and sore. Si Chen is standing over him in a t-shirt and sleep pants, his hair standing on end, looking tense. "What time is it?" Wang Ji asks. Just before midnight, Si Chen says quietly. "Wang Ji, we have to go to the hospital. Ye Mingjue's been in an accident on his bike. He's okay," he adds quickly, seeing the horror on Wang Ji's face. "But Huaisang's down there by himself." Wang Ji grabs his phone, which he'd silenced as he usually does when he's working. He has 7 missed calls from Ye Huaisang and a slew of text messages, the most recent of which just says, "Answer your fucking phone." Alarm has driven the last vestiges of sleep from his mind. "Get dressed," he says. "I can drive." When they arrive at the hospital waiting area, Nie Huaisang is slumped in a chair, staring at the wall-mounted TV. He's wearing skinny jeans and a brightly patterned shirt, his hair styled up in an elaborate swoosh. The relief in his face when he sees them is palpable. He jumps to his feet and punches Wang Ji in the arm. "Why the fuck didn't you answer your phone?" "I was asleep," Wang Ji protests, rubbing his arm. Nie Huaisang rolls his eyes. "Oh, of course, you're a healthy, single 28-year-old man. Why wouldn't you be asleep at 11:30 on a Friday night?" "How is he? How are you?" Si Chen asks, pulling Nie Huaisang into a one-armed hug. Nie Huaisang sighs, sagging a little against Si Chen. "He's okay. No internal injuries, which they were worried about at first, just a bunch of scrapes, a couple of bruised ribs. You should see his helmet," he says, his voice wobbling a little. "It cracked all the way through, but it did its job, although they still want to keep him overnight for observation. He'll need surgery for the broken collarbone. That's scheduled for tomorrow morning. He's all looped up on pain meds, which is pretty hilarious." Si Chen sucks in a breath through his teeth. "Broken collarbone. Those take a long time to heal." "Yeah." Nie Huaisang breathes out a shaky laugh. "He's going to be pissed when he sobers up. They're doing..." He waves a hand towards what Wang Ji gathers as Nie Mingjue's hospital room. "Nurse things in there, so I came out here, give him some privacy." "And you?" prompts Si Chen. "Are you okay? I'm sorry we didn't get down here sooner." "Oh, that's okay. I should have remembered that Wang Ji is 87 years old and called you first," Nie Huaisang says, elbowing Wang Ji in the side. Wang Ji allows this, as Nie Huaisang is in the middle of a family emergency. I'm fine, Nie Huaisang continues. Pretty sure my date thought the whole my brother was in a motorcycle accident thing was an excuse to duck out on her, but what are you going to do? You were on a date? Asks Si Chen, because he is also 87 years old, and a gossipy old auntie to boot. With whom? Bethany from Tinder? Not that it matters now. Wang Ji clears his throat. Do you know what happened? Nie Huaisang grimaces. Hit and run. They think probably a drunk driver who fled the scene. Fortunately, not everybody sucks. A couple of people called an ambulance and stayed with him till it came.
Do you know who the responding officer was?
Nie Huaisang blinks and shakes his head. Spencer, I think. I hadn't met her before. She's around here somewhere, waiting to take Daga's statement. The nurse slips out of Nie Mingjue's room. You can go back in there if you want, she says quietly to Nie Huaisang. He's awake. Si Chen and Wang Ji exchange a look.
I should find Spencer, Wang Ji says. You should go let Mingjue know we're here.
You should, Nie Huaisang agrees, a little too quickly, giving Wang Ji a meaningful glance over Si Chen's shoulder. I'm going to go find a snack machine to raid. I want to see if Mingjue is stoned enough to put bugles on all his fingers like claws. Wang Ji locates Officer Spencer by the coffee machine, shaking powdered creamer into a styrofoam cup of burned-smelling brew. Oh, hey, Detective Lan, she says, giving him a tired smile. That's nice of you to come down and see your partner in the hospital.
What can you tell me? He asks.
She sips her coffee and grimaces. I don't know what I expected, hospital coffee. She pulls out her notepad. Hit and run. Incident occurred around 10:50 p.m. at the corner of Boylston and Thomas. Multiple witnesses saw a large black sedan turn the wrong way at the roundabout, striking Detective Nye's motorcycle at speed. Detective Nye was thrown 15 feet and landed on his left side. Witnesses called 911. The sedan sped off into the neighborhood. Nobody got a plate, she says apologetically, but witnesses say the car was pretty banged up, and fluids found at the scene suggest some damage to the engine block. We've got a call into local mechanics. We'll see if anything turns up. Fucking drunk drivers, she says. Capitol Hill on a Friday night. Drunk driving is a reasonable hypothesis. Meng Chi's not convinced. I'm glad he's okay. Spencer has looked like she might try to pat Wang Ji's shoulder. He tries to unobtrusively move out of patting range. You know, we'll do everything we can to find this guy. We take care of our own. Wang Ji does not say you should be doing everything you can, regardless of who the victim is, because Officer Spencer is trying to be nice. He asks her a few more questions, then heads back to check on his partner. Nie Huaisang is sitting in the same seat he'd been sitting in when Wang Ji and Si Chen had arrived, scrolling through his phone and eating chips. Since I know I'm definitely not going to score tonight, it seemed like a good time to really fuck up my breath with some Cool Ranch Doritos, he says. In a much lower voice, he adds, Si Chen is still in there.
Should I wait? Wang Ji asks. I do need to talk to Mingjue.
No, you should go in. I know it's past your bedtime, Nie Huaisang says with a tolerant smile. Just let me know if you spot any vibes. Wang Ji stares at him, stone-faced. Constant vigilance, Wang Ji. Nie Huaisang brandishes a Cool Ranch-covered finger in Wang Ji's face. Now go. Nie Mingjue looks like hell, but better than Wang Ji had feared. He's a little pale, visibly scraped and bruised, his left arm in an immobilizing sling, but otherwise he looks fairly normal. Normal, that is, except for the almost cartoonishly giddy expression on his face as he gazes at Si Chen, who is sitting in a chair next to Nie Mingjue's hospital bed. Si Chen looks amused, indulgent, and a little flustered.
Hey, Nie Mingjue exclaims. Hey, look, it's Lan Wang Ji, he says to Si Chen.
Wang Ji notices with a hidden surge of glee that Nie Mingjue is holding Si Chen's hand in his working hand. Yes. Hello, Wang Ji, Si Chen says, a smile playing at the corners of his mouth.
I love this fucking guy, Nie Mingjue slurs. I was just saying to Ahuan how it's so nice that you guys came down to see me. You guys are like...
To Wang Ji's mounting horror, Nie Mingjue's eyes well up with tears.
You guys are like my fucking family.
Oh, don't cry, Daga,
Si Chen says, peering into Nieming-jue's face with a look of concern.
We're happy to be here.
But I'm not, Nieming-jue protests, grabbing at Si Chen's hand again. I'm not your brother. Not really. We're not related.
Yes, I know, Si Chen says patiently.
Realizing that Nieming-jue is about 3 seconds away from seriously embarrassing himself, Wang Ji decides to take charge of the situation.
Would it be all right if I spoke with Nieming-jue privately? He asks.
Of course.
Si Chen gently extracts his hand from Nieming-jue's grasp.
Get some rest, Daga, he says. I'll see you after your surgery in the morning.
Nieming-jue watches Si Chen go, that besotted smile still looking incongruous on his chiseled, mustached face. He opens his mouth to say something, and Wang Ji is quite sure he does not want to hear whatever thoughts Nieming-jue might be having about his brother right now.
So, he says preemptively, laying on the cop voice a little thicker than usual.
Nieming-jue blinks and looks at him, seeming to come back to himself a little bit.
So,
he replies.
Hit and run. Looks that way, Nieming-jue says blearily.
His hair is plastered down over his forehead from some combination of helmet and sweat and hospital. Wang Ji keeps his voice carefully neutral, professional, just the facts.
Officers on the scene think it was a drunk driver.
Nieming-jue shrugs, then winces, grabbing his left shoulder.
Could be.
He fixes Wang Ji with the sort of overly serious look people give you when they're trying to seem less intoxicated than they are.
Be a hell of a coincidence, though.
Wang Ji nods. He's been thinking much the same thing.
You think someone was trying to take you out?
Or send a message. Nieming-jue agrees. He shifts restlessly in the bed, grimacing.
In which case, message fucking received.
When's?
Seems likely. Good job, too. I'm not going anywhere for a while. He sighs. Sorry, kiddo.
Wang Ji thinks about the way Wen Chao had gotten in Nieming-jue's face. The way the tension in the room had narrowed to a knife-sharp edge when Nieming-jue asked about the letterhead.
I owe you an apology, he says.
Nieming-jue snorts.
No, you fucking don't.
It was my idea to...
Oh my god, Nieming-jue groans. You fucking glands and your fucking blame fetish. You and Si Chen our whole lives just constantly competing for whose fault it can be the most.
He gives Wang Ji his sternest eyebrow.
I'm a grown-up and a cop, and I'm older than you. I make my own choices. You didn't make me do shit.
Even so, Wang Ji says, we would not have been there today if it weren't for me. Closing his eyes, Nieming-jue lets his head fall back against the pillow.
I will kick your entire ass, Lam Wang Ji.
You should get some sleep. We will discuss this more tomorrow.
Wait,
Nieming-jue rasps. He swallows hard.
Bashia.
Your bike was damaged, but not totaled, Wang Ji tells him with a small smile. Huaisang made sure they towed it to your regular garage.
Thanks.
His partner's speech is getting increasingly slurred. He's half asleep already.
Watch out for yourself, okay? You and your brother.
He chuckles softly to himself.
Hell, if you have time, watch out for my brother, too.
I will. Scene break and flashback. Wang Ji pauses at his mailbox on his way out of the building, but it's all junk today. He tosses the whole stack in the paper recycling bin Si Chen has helpfully suggested the property manager provide and rubs the sweat from the back of his neck. It's already in the 80s today, and their building, for all its charms, isn't air-conditioned. Lan Zhan, he hears behind him, and turns around just in time for Wei Ying to completely murder him on the spot. He's wearing a faded gray t-shirt with the sleeves cut off, baring his smooth, tanned arms to the shoulder. His black running shorts skim the strong muscles of his thighs. He has a red bandana tied around the top of his head, his hair in a low, damp ponytail beneath it, and a tote bag slung over one shoulder.
I thought that was you, he says cheerfully.
Bouncing up to Wang Ji, cat-like eyes sparkling. His upper lip glistens with sweat. The part of Wang Ji that is still functioning, the part of his brain that's not sweeping Wei Ying up in his arms, wrapping those long legs around him, pinning those lithe wrists against the bank of mailboxes, licking the sweat from Wang's collarbones, manages to say, hello. Wei-ying seems preoccupied. He's staring thoughtfully at a point somewhere at Wang Ji's collar. Wang Ji glances down at himself, but he doesn't see anything unusual. He's wearing a pale blue linen shirt, an extra button worn open in concession to the heat, but he hasn't dropped food on himself or anything. When he looks back up at Wei-ying, the preoccupied look has vanished. "Happy Sunday," Wei-ying says, blinking. "I was about to walk down to the park. Want to come?" Wang Ji does want to come. He supposes they could also go to the park. "It's my first day off in like 10 days, and my apartment is like a million degrees, so I thought I'd try to grab a shady spot somewhere," Wei-ying says as they walk. "What have you been up to today?" Wang Ji talks to him a bit about the book he's been reading, the no-bake tofu cheesecake recipe that he and Si Chen are working on. Wei-ying talks about his roommates, and how he'd narrowly escaped being dragged along to hike Little C that morning. It's nice. Companionable. It might be Little Psy, I'll have to ask later. But I'm going forward. We need to go. Okay. It's nice. Companionable. He's been worried, even after their last conversation on the roof. A part of him has been waiting for Wei-ying to decide that he can't overlook Wang Ji's profession after all. But Wei-ying chatters away like nothing has changed. It hurts his heart a little, Wei-ying's capacity for forgiveness. The park is crowded with people playing frisbee and hacky sack and sunning themselves, but they manage to find a shady spot away from the main open area. Wei-ying produces a blanket from his tote bag and spreads it out, flopping down with a satisfied sigh. Wang Ji sits gingerly down next to him, keeping his eyes carefully away from where Wei-ying's t-shirt has ridden up to expose an inch of his stomach, scrupulously avoiding looking at the line of hair that disappears into the waistband of Wei-ying's shorts. "There's iced tea in my bag if you want some," Wei-ying says. "The orange Nalgene is the tea. The blue one is sangria." "Open containers of alcohol are not allowed in Seattle parks," Wang Ji reminds him, but he digs out the orange bottle and takes a swig. The tea is cold and refreshing, if sweeter than he likes it. "Well, it's not open. It's in a Nalgene lantern," Wei-ying says airily. "Anyway." Wei-ying gasps suddenly and sits up in one startled fluid movement, looking around them with frightened eyes. Wang Ji looks around as well, but doesn't see anything of note, just other parkgoers enjoying the sunshine. "What?" "Nothing," Wei-ying says. "I thought I heard something." He smiles and relaxes a bit, but doesn't lie back down. A part of him still seems alert, watchful. "What were we talking about?" "You were about to be incorrect about the definition of an open container," Wang Ji says. Wei-ying opens his mouth to retort, but before he can, a frisbee sails in to land on their blanket. Reflexively, they both look up in the direction it came from. A small dog, some kind of terrier, is running joyfully toward them, barking, its owner jogging a few steps behind. Beside him, Wei-ying makes a sound that's somewhere between a shriek and a yelp and leaps to his feet. He backs away and hits the tree behind them with an audible thunk. Wang Ji rises to his feet as well. The dog reaches the blanket and snatches up the frisbee in its little brown and white muzzle, frolicking and jumping up at Wang Ji's feet. Wei-ying moans behind him. "No, no, 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 no," he's whimpering. Feeling a little ridiculous, Wang Ji interposes his body between Wei-ying and the little dog. "No," he tells it sternly. "Go away." "Sorry." The dog's owner, a sunburned blonde guy maybe a few years their junior, says breathlessly as he catches up. "Sorry, he got away from me. He's friendly, don't worry," he says. Wei-ying has clenched his fists in the back of Wang Ji's shirt. Wang Ji can hear him breathing, fast and uneven and panicky. Wang Ji looks at the dog's owner, who is petting the dog and attempting to take the frisbee back and making no visible effort to move it away from them, and feels a spike of indignation on Wei-ying's behalf. "All animals are required to be on a leash within the city of Seattle, unless in a designated off-leash area, which this is not," he snaps at the guy. "Violation of leash ordinances is punishable by up to a $150 fine. "Jesus, chill out, man," the dog's owner says. He glares at them, but mercifully collects his dog and walks away. Wang Ji wants to turn around and check on his friend, but Wei-ying is still clinging to the back of his shirt, holding Wang Ji in front of him like a shield. "Do you want me to cite him?" Wang Ji asks over his shoulder. "What?" Wei-ying asks. "Oh." He hastily loosens his grip on Wang Ji's shirt. "Sorry." Turning to face him, Wang Ji can see that Wei-ying is pale and shaky, leaning against the trunk of the tree. "Are you all right?" he asks. Wei Ying laughs weakly.
Yeah, sorry, I just don't like dogs. Sorry, I know I'm being ridiculous,
He swallows hard, staring over Wang Ji's shoulder in the direction the guy with the dog had gone, as though worried the dog might suddenly reappear.
Sit down, Wang Ji urges him. This is so embarrassing, that dog was like 20 pounds.
Wei Ying laughs, avoiding Wang Ji's eyes as he settles back down onto the blanket.
Reader's note, 20 pounds seems huge. I can understand.
No, I know. I mean, I actually do not think 20 pounds is huge, but it feels, I you know, dogs running towards you can be scary.
For sure.
Wang Ji sits down next to him, crossing his legs. Dogs can be alarming. Wei Ying bites his lip, which Wang Ji would find unbearably cute if he wasn't so worried about him.
When I was a kid, he says haltingly, I lived with this foster family for a while, and they had these big dogs. Big, I don't even know what kind. Way bigger than me. I was a pretty small kid.
He shakes his head ruefully.
I was terrified of them. But everyone just kept telling me to toughen up. They were just dogs. One night, I was taking out the garbage, and I don't know, I think there had been like a coyote in the neighborhood or something, but the dogs were freaking out. And when I went out there, they just, he waves a hand, went crazy.
Meng Ji frowns. They attacked you?
Wei Ying folds his leg up between them and runs his fingers over his lean calf muscle, so Wang Ji can see the silvery traces of old, jagged scars gleaming under the soft, dark hair there.
Meng Ji feels a lump rising in his throat. He wants to touch the scars, wants to somehow lay his hand over them and heal them, even though he knows that it's not possible.
Yeah, Wei Ying says. Took a pretty sizable chunk out of me. I've always had kind of a thing about dogs since then.
He exhales, chuckles softly.
I should probably get over it. It's been more than 20 years. I just don't know how, I guess.
You must have been pretty young, Wang Ji says, doing some quick mental math.
Wei Ying stretches his leg back out and leans back on his hands. I guess I was like 5.
Wang Ji swallows the horror that rises in him at that.
What did your foster family do?
Oh, they took me to the hospital, Wei Ying says, his tone of voice suggesting that this was a nice favor for them to have done for him.
After that, it was pretty clear that I couldn't live with the dogs anymore, so he shrugs with one shoulder. They had to find me somewhere else to live. It's too bad, they were nice.
There's nothing to say to that, nothing that Wang Ji can think of to say.
I'm sorry, he finally manages after a long, awkward moment.
Wei Ying turns to look at him, eyebrows raised in surprise.
Oh, it turned out okay, he says quickly. It wasn't long after that that I went to live with my adoptive family. So, you know, it all turned out.
He looks away again, drawing a hitching breath.
Okay.
Wang Ji looks around the park, noticing for the first time how many dogs are in the vicinity. He can spot at least 3 from where they're sitting, all on leash, thankfully. The guy with the little dog and the frisbee appears to have cleared out.
Wang Ji is beset with a sudden vindictive urge to track him down and cite him into oblivion. Not that that would help the situation anyway.
He turns and rummages around in Wei Ying's tote bag instead, pulling out the blue water bottle. It's cold and sweating with condensation in the warm summer air. He holds it out to Wei Ying. Wei Ying's eyes flutter up to his with a look of soft astonishment.
What about open container laws? Wei Ying asks. His voice is teasing, but his face is bewildered.
Just this once, Wang Ji says firmly, settling back against the trunk of the tree.
Author's endnotes.
Extremely Grandpa and the Princess Bride voice.
Wei Ying is not dead at this time. I'm explaining to you because you look nervous.
Reader's note. Thank you. I was. I appreciate that very much. Back to the author's note. Did I transport Detective Miles Hoffman from Stumptown to Seattle just to appear in one scene of this fic? Yes. Does this universe really not have enough attractive men in it that I needed to add a Michael Ealy cameo? Look, it's my fic and I'll do as I please. As you may have noticed, the chapter count on this fic has changed. This is the last chapter where, in the outline, I was like, this might actually be 2 chapters, and it totally was. So instead of chapter 5 out of 9, this is now chapter 5 out of 10. Thanks so much to everyone who has been leaving comments and kudos and sharing this fic. I've come to really love it, and I'm so happy y'all are enjoying it too. I'm going to try really hard to stick to the chapter every Wednesday schedule, but I'm going to be honest with you. Chapter 6 might end up being a few days late,
as I have used up the multi-week buffer I had built up when I started posting this. Thanks as always to Duessa, Spoops, and Ericacia for beta-ing and yelling. Coming soon in Chapter 6, teaming up with Jiang Wenyin. A visit to the farmer's market, Sunday night. End of chapter. So, we had been talking about the hospital, and I thought that meant we were going to find Wei Ying. Because who else would go to the hospital? I did not see the car coming out of nowhere. I wanted to make some sort of joke about Niming Tui not seeing it either, but I'm just too sad about it for that. But he's fine, so it's going to be okay. Well, it could just more people to worry about. But I appreciate very much the assurance in the end notes that Wei Ying is not dead. I appreciate that. Again, I did know that, because if Wei Ying was dead, I would not have enjoyed this fic. And I did enjoy it. Well, thank you so much for listening, and I will be back soon with the next chapter. Bye.